We have the honor of having Isabella Rossellini in the studio with us today. Isabella is a legendary actress, model, and filmmaker. She has appeared in many classic films like Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, Big Night, Death Becomes Her, among many others. Her award-winning series of shorts, Green Porno, Seduce Me, and Mamas, offer funny and insightful studies of animal behavior. Her book, My Chickens and I, was published in 2017. Rossellini also runs an organic farm in Bellport, New York, but she's in Los Angeles for her latest project, Link Link Circus, a theatricalized lecture that focuses on the links between humans and animals via Darwin's theory of evolution. The show includes Rossellini's short comic films, home movies, and animations. Her dog, Pan, is also in the show.
Yes.
Isabella, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Besides my dog, also Andy Byers, who is a puppeteer, because we also have puppeteering on stage. And also Andy designed all the costumes, the sets, the music. So he's an important person, but we always talk about dogs with him too. He'll understand
too.
That you just mentioned the dog and not him.
The dog did not do all those things, so we should credit Andy.
And Andy is also who did the background sets for Green Porno.
Exactly.
Right?
All my short films, we have been working together now for 12 years together.
Wow. Those are fabulous sets and puppets there, too. Let's just talk a little bit more about the premise of Link Link Circus. What did you want to explore with this show?
So I always say that I would like the audience to have two reactions. The first one is to go, ha, 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 I laugh, because all my work is comical. And then to have a second reaction after, which is, ah, I didn't know that. So it's, ha, 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 ah, this is what I like. All that I write is based on science. I have a master's degree on animal behavior and conservation, and that degree had helped me a lot to access scientific papers that often I'd written kind of difficult to read and boring to read, but it's fascinating science. So I try to translate it into something that is entertaining, because I'm an entertainer. I've always been an entertainer all my life.
And I'd love to hear when in your life you got this master's degree in animal behavior and why.
You know, I was working as a model and as an actress. And then as you grow older, there is less work. In fact, I wasn't working at all as a model. And even acting was really slowing down. I have two children. They were grown up and they moved out of the house. So I had a lot of time in my hand. I was a little bit bored. And I always loved animal behavior. It was something that I've always read about. And when I was a little girl or a teenager, it wasn't really something that was offered at the university. I grew up in Italy. There was biology, zoology, but there wasn't really animal behavior, and I was specifically interested in animal behavior. And then one day I attended at Hunter College a lecture by the great Temple Grandin, who is this woman who is a big animal advocate, and she designed a slaughterhouse to make it easier for the animal to die. It's fascinating, contradictory, but also fascinating, and she's really a top scientist. And I went to hear her talk, and they were handing out animal behavioral study, a new department at Hunter College in New York, where I live. So I signed up that evening, and because I always was curious about it, it was always something I wanted to do, but I didn't think it was accessible for me, you know, at this point at my age. So I did graduate just last May.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
And what was it like for you to be back in a classroom?
It was great. You know, actually, it wasn't the only one my age. There were a lot of people, at least for the first year or so of the master, there were a lot of people that were retired. Mm-hmm. So like me, they felt like, and they had curiosities, they had hobbies, and they came back to university to at least satisfy part of it. Sometimes they audit the classes. I couldn't audit the classes because I'm not disciplined enough. I needed the fear of the exam, the grade, because incredibly enough, although work had stopped, it started again. And so it was difficult for me to work and study at the same time, because as an actress, you're very nomadic. And as a student, you have to stay in class. You can't travel so much. So I think if I audited it and I didn't commit, I was going to postpone it. Mm-hmm. And I had attempted to start it before, and I always gave it up because work was too demanding. So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And it worked. And you do learn a lot. I learned a lot. And I translated all I've learned in Link Link Circus. So the idea, the name circus, is because I wanted to give it an entertainment quality. And my dog is with me, and Andy is with me as a puppeteer. And we want to do a circus, but we want to talk about animal cognition, their ability to feel, their ability to understand, to think, to make choices, which is something that has been generally denied to animals. They say their behavior is based on instinct, and just like machine, stimulus response. But new science proved that, no, there is a continuity, even a cognitive continuity, between us and animals. I mean, everybody knows that the bones that constitute our hands can constitute the wing of a bat or the fin of a whale. Mm-hmm. It's the same, only they adapted as we have become different species. We must have come from something original, and then in the thousands and thousands of years, we became different species. And so we differentiate, but it's still some continuity, a link. But the cognitive link is not really recognized. We think we are the only one who are capable of thinking, pondering which actions to take, have a judgment. But this seems to have collapsed.
Yeah. And do you think that if people recognize that animals have cognition, that they have feelings, that they are, you know, sentient beings, maybe not quite at our level, but around there, that it would be like unbearable and that the order of the world would have to change? So it's just something that people deny because to give them that much autonomy would kind of upend the structure of society.
Well, of course, when Darwin, with his theory of evolution, said we were linked with animal, a lot of people took great offense. They said we have nothing to do with animals. We're separated. We're different than them. Genetically, also nowadays, we know Darwin didn't know genetic. He wasn't yet discovered. But we also know genetically that we share a lot with animals. So there is a link. I find that to be very touching, that we're all connected, even with plants. I do know that, yes, if you recognize that animals are sentient, you probably have a bigger moral issue. But I am not a vegetarian. I'm not vegan. I'm a carnivore. And yes, I agree that it's harder. And it should be harder. And the animal eat us, so we eat them. That's, I think, is an order in nature. Mm. But I think I try as much as I can to eat meat of animals that are not tortured. They are not kept in cages. They are not filled with hormones. It's also healthy for us. But I do think there is a natural world, and the natural world, we eat each other.
Well, something I love, I was watching your Mommy series with the hamsters.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's about how hamsters eat their young, that you deliver all these babies and then you decide, I only want 8, so I'll eat 2 of these because you have 10. And it's very funny, but, you know, that's taboo, of course, in our society, but...
Of course, it's a taboo in our society. Yes, it should be.
So the question
of maternal instinct was interesting because now that women entering the science and the fields where generally men had been, they ask questions that maybe a man was not so interested. For example, maternal instinct, we all talk about it, but really when we have to define it scientifically, nobody knows it. A maternal instinct, we assume, is maternal love for babies, so automatically you would protect them. But these women scientists, among which Alene Zuk, with whom I've collaborated in this series called Mama, looked into different species to see if there was a common denominator to all females that you could say, yes, this is the maternal instinct. And instead she found, once again, these incredible varieties, the biodiversity there is out there. Yes, there are mamas like us who protect our children. And a hamster might also protect her children. But if there is too many, she eats a few. So she can recuperate some of the energy without abandoning the other babies. So she's very smart in a way.
Yeah.
But maternal instinct, it's difficult to define as one thing. And there are other, you know, there is a spider called the Aelgandros that lets the baby eat her. She protects the egg sac, and then when her babies come out, the first thing they eat is herself. Not only that, she helps the baby eat herself by dissolving her body into a mush, because they are babies, it's easier for them to eat mush. So you see that there is an incredible diversity from the top sacrifice of the Aelgandros to the hamster, who's much more practical and eats a few babies if there's too many.
I also saw in a video, I think that's related to Link Link Circus, is you point out that we also have maternal feelings to things that are not necessarily our babies, like our dogs.
Yes.
So was there a time when you were sort of figuring out your maternal instincts when it came to the animals that you house and that you work and play with?
Well, you know, we always imagine that we domesticated animal. I mean, all domestic animal come from wild stock. You know, mm-hmm. we created the great-great-grandfather of the boar became the domestic pig. Then it was a great-great-great-grandfather of a cow. Actually, the original cow was called the Uruk species that has become our domestic cows. And we did that also with dogs. Dogs come from wolf, and they have been slowly domesticated. Domestication is when there are so many different genetics that you start look different from your original and you want to give it a different name. And in science, it's called speciation. And that's mm-hmm. why we call the wolf and we call the dog. But they are very similar still. They can make viable puppies. A wolf can have puppies with a dog, for example. So we always imagined that when we did domestication, which was our ancestor, they manipulated evolution. They didn't know about evolution. That was discovered by Charles Darwin 150 years ago. But they knew that children looked like parents. And so when they started farming, they selected the pigs that were maybe fatter or they were calmer because mm-hmm. they were easier to handle and fatter because there was the meat was more delicious if it had fat content. Century after century, they modified the animals that became the domestic pig. But we never thought about that we all co-evolved. So there must have been also some pressure of the animal on us. Mm-hmm. And the wolf was not really domesticated for us to eat it. Yes, in certain countries they eat dogs, but it's rare. Most of the time, dog is man's best friend, is the companion, whether we use it for hunting or for guarding or for herding sheep or just for companionship. So why not also the wolf domesticating us and kidnapping in us the feelings that we generally reserve for our babies for themselves, because we are the top predators. We are much more aggressive than a wolf. So it could be that dogs have found a way to elicit in us tender feelings mm-hmm. so that we are not going to be aggressive toward mm-hmm. them.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Talk about your farm and the kind of animals you have there. And I gather that growing up, you were also interested in animals, but did your kind of real focus and curiosity start when you began farming?
No, really, I always loved animals, and I started farming because in Italy, there's a very strong culture of food and therefore farming. And the farms are not very far from the town. It's not like in America, I live in New York, we're here in Los Angeles. The farms are so far away, and the farm here are big industrial farms that are enormous. You can't really go visit. But in Italy, they are very family-run farms, small, most of the time, still today. So there is a much more direct, it's part of our culture, even if you grew up in Rome. And I miss that. And so for a while, I did think to go back to school and study to become a farmer. But when I was 20, 25, people were leaving the farms because all the industrial farming, that was the time when the industrial farming came to be. And so the idea to have an artisanal farm seemed to me so, people said, what are you talking about? You're not going to make a living. And when you're young, you have to make a living. You know, you have to think of a job that makes a living. So I didn't go to farming. But now a piece of land came available next to my house. And of course, I can retire. I was wise enough to set aside some money. I don't have to work. I work because I like it. And also the farm seemed to me something that I always wanted. And instead of having a house with a swimming pool and a tennis court, I want to have a farm. And this has became, so from a toy or from a luxury, it became incredible. First of all, what it does to the community. To have a small artisanal farm, it's incredibly appealing to mothers who are coming with their children and can show chickens, can show ducks, can show sheep, can show the different kind of wool that sheep have. Because, of course, each breed offers wool for a carpet, but it's not the same wool that we would use for our sweaters. It has to be a much softer one, but the carpet has to be a much stronger one. That you have different breeds of sheep. Vegetable, where is the season where carrots grow? Where is the season where squash grows? And so we have a farm now that has way beyond my personal pleasure. It's become really part of the community where I live. Very present for the community, the school, everybody.
You are listening to the LARB Radio Hour, recorded at KPFK in sunny Studio City. We've been listening to our interview with Isabella Rossellini. We'll return to that conversation in just a moment, but first we have